Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
President Obama announces his 10-year debt reduction package and, surprise, the Republicans don't like it. Netflix announces an even newer plan in hopes of all alienating their remaining customers. And an elderly man's 10-foot fiberglass giraffe goes missing.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, September 19th, 2011. A woman seriously injured late Sunday night in a collision with a Portland police officer was driving drunk, police said. The crash ejected the woman from her car and catapulted the badly damaged police car off the street into a parking lot, according to Sergeant Pete Simpson. Witnesses said the officer was responding to an emergency call with lights and sirens activated. He did not have the green light, but he did slow at the intersection near Southeast 122nd and Stark. I'm sure he did. The woman's car ended up several hundred yards away from the intersection, and the police car spun a half dozen times before coming to arrest. The official police statement said Officer Thomas Clark was traveling eastbound on Stark when he was hit by a car driven by Marinella Stothoff of Milwaukee, who was going southbound on 122nd. Both were rushed to local hospitals. Stothoff was listed in serious condition, and Clark was listed in good condition. Mayor Sam Adams tweeted the following this morning: just visited our at Portland police officer hit by a suspected drunk driver. He is banged up but in good spirits. Wish him well. So he tweeted his good wishes.
It's just like Daly would have done.
After his tweet, the police bureau sent out another statement that said that Sothoff was under the influence of alcohol during the crash. It does not say whether that was a direct factor in the crash or whether she was cited.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, September 19th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, here's Science on the March. That's around 28 minutes from now at 12:45 Pacific time here in the great city of Portland, Oregon. You will have your entertainment news and next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, we'll have a recap of last night's episode of Breaking Bad, episode 10, season 4, and Mr. Aaron Duran with The Weekend Geek. He will be in the studio with us today. That is coming up later on at RickEmersonShow.com. Yes, indeed. Yes, it is. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
In a blunt rejoinder to congressional Republicans, President Barack Obama called for a $1.5 trillion new tax package Monday, part of a total 10-year deficit reduction package totaling more than $3 trillion. We can't just cut our way out of this hole, the president said. The plan, called the Buffett Rule, is named for billionaire Warren Buffett, who says the rich aren't paying their fair share of taxes. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin describes how it would work.
This is taxes. What, taxes one?
He would come up with the revenue to pay for tax cuts for working families and incentives for small businesses to hire. So he went after two areas. He said we've got to trim the deductions which the wealthiest people in America can take. And secondly, we have to end the federal subsidy to the oil companies, which are the most profitable and richest companies in America.
The president's proposal would predominantly hit upper-income taxpayers, but would also reduce spending in mandatory benefit programs, including Medicare and Medicaid, by $580 billion. It also counts savings of $1 trillion over 10 years from the withdrawal of troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. Obama's recommendation to a joint congressional committee serves as a sharp counterpoint to Republican lawmakers who have insisted that tax increases should play no part in taming the nation's escalating national debt. Obama's plan would end Bush-era tax cuts for top earners and would limit their deductions. From the Rose Garden at the White House, Obama said, "It's only right we ask everyone to pay their fair share." Responding to a complaint from Republicans about his proposed tax on Wendell Willkie is paying way more taxes than he should.
I won't have it.
Obama added, "This is not class warfare. It's math." Durbin.
It's an election here.
Durbin says it's a good idea.
All right. This is taxes two.
Warren Buffett has been honest, and other people I know who have been fortunate in life and wealthy have said, "For goodness sakes, you can raise my taxes if that's going to help this economy move forward."
Yes, everyone is saying that.
For goodness sakes.
Please, please raise my taxes. I can't actually walk out the door without being besieged by people who are saying, "Please raise my taxes."
No, I think it's only like three guys who are so rich that money has ceased to have any meaning to them.
Here's the thing.
They're the ones who say, "Sure, raise my taxes."
Yeah,
And let's do that. Let's raise the taxes on Bill Gates and Warren Buffett.
Just them.
Paul Allen. And then just everybody else can maybe pay like a flat 10%.
Maybe he should just, maybe they can, there can be some sort of a prize. They can, one of those prizes you can't buy. You know, like it wouldn't be like a car, like you would win, like Court Weber would come to your house and give you a slow oil rub.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, you can buy that now.
Well.
But I mean, it's for less than you might imagine. but we offer them some sort of, or they get to run, like another country.
Yeah.
We could give them Myanmar or someplace nobody's doing anything with.
They could have one of Branson's islands.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, he's just using them for vacations.
Name a planet after them.
That's right.
You know, or some sort of a hadron-like collider, like a Buffetron, we'd call it that. Or
the Buffetron 5000.
Yeah. I mean, it's like whoever donates the most or whatever. And we just, you know, and in exchange, we just raise taxes just on like those three guys. You know, on just like Richard Branson and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. End.
I like that. Obama vowed to veto any deficit reduction package that cuts benefits to Medicare recipients, but does not contain revenue increases. The Republican reaction, unsurprisingly, was swift and derisive.
Revenue increases. Learn to sell something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Open up a craft store or something. Jesus.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said veto threats, a massive tax hike, phantom savings, and punting on entitlement reform is not a recipe for economic or job growth or even meaningful deficit reduction.
Why doesn't the government just consider selling something? That's how everybody else makes money.
Yeah.
Like we could.
We're not using Guam for anything, are we?
Can't we just sell? I mean, don't we sell a lot of blue jeans around the world?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Doesn't Levi Strauss? Why doesn't the government just start selling blue jeans? I mean, and I'm not saying that they unfairly compete. They have to sell them at the same market rate as Levi Strauss. But I mean, why doesn't the government just start selling, or cheesecake? Everybody likes cheesecake. Government starts selling a little bit of cheesecake.
Or bootleg DVDs.
Yeah.
The government could be the only ones that are allowed to make bootleg DVDs.
You just set Jack Valenti's wrinkled ass up at a card table in Beijing and just have him go to town. There you go. That seems like, I'm just saying, that seems like the way they ask everybody else to make their money.
Well, Obama's proposal comes amid Democratic demands that Obama take a tougher stance against Republicans. And while the plan stands little chance of passing Congress, its populist pitch is one that the White House believes the public can support. So this is...
Especially because we don't have to do anything. All we have to do is just go, uh-huh, and go back to watching TV.
Hey, wow, that's a great idea, Mr. Obama. But it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just to make us like him more.
Yeah, well, you know, when I said... So we're heading into an election cycle, certainly. Well. And when they say the public supports this... I guess because we're not storming the White House with pitchforks, that the default is I support it, I guess.
I guess.
Maybe.
Considering that you figured 95% of the public probably isn't even aware that this is going on.
Seriously. So, and, you know, and he's talking about, and let's be honest, he's also talking about taxing a group of people that nobody here knows. You know, it's like taxing some guy who lives in a building that I'll never be invited to and that I would be denied entrance to. And so, therefore, it's easy for me to go, Sure, tax that guy. I don't know him. I'll never meet him. It's like that Twilight Zone where you press the red button in the box and then a guy dies and you get $1 million.
And I would totally do that in a second, by the way. My only question would be, do I know the guy? And if there's no, he's a stranger. So I never understood what the problem was.
Oh, I don't even care if I know him, frankly. And it doesn't have to be $1 million. You give me $100, I'll kill somebody that I know right now. Seriously. It's got to be $100 in advance, though. None of that tearing the bill in half and giving me the other half later, Jazz.
Well, many of us woke up this morning to emails from Netflix in our inboxes.
Did we?
Yes, many of us did.
Okay.
The letter was also posted on Netflix website late Sunday night, when company's chief executive, Reed Hastings, apologized to everyone so deeply and sincerely.
Reed Hastings, from 1955.
For the way he handled recent changes to Netflix pricing and subscription models. And then said, oh yeah, and by the way, bend over, I'm screwing you again in a completely different way.
When did that happen?
That happened last night.
Maybe I missed that.
The company has been facing a backlash from customers unhappy with its decision to alter its price structure so that subscribers no longer are given automatic access to both the mail service and the online streaming option. Also, that it was a 60% increase to get the service you were previously getting and without any new product.
Also, we're a nation of babies. Seriously, if you don't like it, don't buy it.
Well, and apparently that was the choice that a lot of people made, and yet Netflix has still decided that the new plan they announced yesterday...
Because they're splitting it off into two different divisions.
It's going to be two completely different services.
Which should make people happy, because then you can get one or you can get the other. I don't know anybody that's saying that I demand to have both.
But if you do want both, you now have to go to two different places and manage two different accounts on two completely different websites.
You know, that's life in the NBA.
And, of course, the announced price change remains the same. What changes, however, is the services are two separate entities with two separate names and separate lines on customers' credit card statements. Beginning a few weeks, there'll be Netflix, the video streaming service, and Quixter.
Yes.
The DVD by mail company.
Well, it's like domain names. All the good ones are taken.
Hastings wrote, we realize that streaming and DVD by mail are becoming two quite different businesses and very different cross structures, different benefits that need to be marketed differently, and we need to let each grow and operate independently.
It's just the idea that everybody's pissed off at Netflix about this like it was their decision. I mean, Netflix is getting bent over by movie studios and by streaming content providers.
I think everyone is upset because the customer service aspect of this is so bad.
Well, what is the customer service aspect? I mean, they're going to charge more, like it or don't.
Exactly. And that
doesn't... What is the third option there?
The third option is you say, we are going to be rolling this out. This is why it is going to be happening. You also try and offer more value.
How do you think I know about it? Do you think I have dinner with Reed Hastings? I know about it because they said all those things.
You know about it because they sprung it on the public as a done deal and didn't tell you this is going to be happening.
Yes, they should have asked me for my vote.
It's bad. It's just bad. It's a bad way to handle your customers, and it's bad. It's bad customer service.
I guess. I mean, it's not like they just started billing me for it without telling me. They said, hey, guess what? We're raising our prices, and sorry, but that's just sort of the way we have to do it. I mean, I'm not happy about it. I'm just saying, it seems like they did everything you're supposed to do. They apologized. They said, we don't really have any choice. It's not their fault. I mean, the math of it says it's not their fault. We all know it's not their fault. They didn't come to my house and give me a reach around, but... I'm not saying I'm happy to be paying more money or whatever, but there's a lot of, Netflix is still giving people, even at this raised price, you are still paying, it's like with computers, you are still paying so much less for so much more than you ever could have gotten for that same price, 15 years ago. I mean, this is like that whole, I don't like that the killing ended on a cliffhanger thing. We're just a nation of babies.
The thing is, it's not a matter of it being a nation of babies. It's also, it just seems like very bad business.
It seems that way, but it's bad business in the sense that people are irritated, but I don't know what they did that was so wrong.
You're charging people more money without giving them more value for it, and now you're making the customer experience more irritating and less intuitive.
Well, they're only doing the second half because of the first half, which, again, they had no choice in doing. I mean, this is like when the record companies all went to Apple and demanded that iTunes raise all of their prices or we're not going to license any of our music to you. Netflix is an Apple. Netflix isn't able to dig in their heels and say, you know, get bent. I mean, Netflix got, had a gun put to their head by movie studios. Those are the people we should be irritated at. I mean, we're taking it out on the middleman who really, honestly, is just passing along the screwing he's getting from the studios.
But the thing is, they're passing along the screwing. They pass along the initial screwing from the studios without explaining in any way or offering anything at the time for why it was.
They did explain it. That's how I know. It's not like I have access to secret information that no one else was able to. There's not like a memo that came just to me.
They dropped it on people and said, this is what's happened.
By dropped, you mean announced?
Yes.
Yes, they announced it. Bastards! Bastards! You'll all pay!
I know that you don't care. I know that you're fine with it. But the thing is, it's, you know,
not that I, don't,
I am it's not alone.
That, okay, in, just let's in, ratchet down the... It's not that I don't care. It's not that I don't care. It's that, like, that's just the way things happen sometimes. They got screwed by the movie studios, and I can't expect them to just, like, eat all of that money. That's just not the way it works.
And I don't think any... I'm not saying that they should. I'm saying that the way they handled it with their customers
I don't know what
was
that means.
Poor.
It means they announced it, and then...
And then didn't explain what they were giving people for that additional 60% they would be charging for the same services. No,
that's
they
how I, that's
didn't.
How I know. How do I know it then? Did they sneak
because
into my head and put it in there like Matrix
because
style?
Because we spent 2 weeks talking about it after it was announced as a fait accompli in people's laps. They didn't announce in advance.
It's in there next to that Mars vacation that was implanted in my brain.
Anyway.
As someone says, it's still a better deal than Comcast will ever give you.
Well, yeah, but there are an awful lot of people who stopped doing business with Comcast because of the exact same attitude towards their customers. With this move, Hastings, according to TechCrunch, Hastings is reaffirming his long-held belief that streaming is the future of Netflix and the future of entertainment, and Wall Street can judge its progress by how well the streaming business is doing on its own. Separating the businesses will also force customers to make a choice, and it is obvious which choice Hastings wants them to make. And I'm assuming that would be the one that starts with N and does not have the crappy name of Quickster. So, it seems like my personal watch, looking at this from the outside, not knowing obviously anything about how they make their business decisions, it strikes me as something where they know that DVDs are on the way out. They know that they are going to need to kind of steer everyone in the direction of streaming.
Right.
And so now they're basically trying to irritate everybody into not getting DVDs from them anymore.
I don't really think that's the case. I think if that were the case, they would just stop. I mean, they're going to do it as long as it keeps making money, but I mean, I think they also know the writing is on the wall.
Yeah.
Eventually, physical media will be phased out in terms of streaming.
But even with this decision, their stock price dropped like $20 a share this morning. So if they had just dropped DVDs by mail entirely in one fell swoop, what would have been the business effect there? What would have been the effect on
Well, you know, they've said forever and ever, they've never made a secret of the fact that they're going to ultimately go streaming only. That's not... You're acting like it's like they're secretly. They said like years and years ago.
Yes.
That's their plan. So yes, you're right. That's a thing that they're trying to get people to do. They've said that for years.
Well, doing it by alienating and annoying your customers doesn't really seem to be very good business.
That's the part you're just making up because, as you said, you don't know what guides their business decisions. So you're just sort of assuming that that is...
Okay. I'm assuming that I am just guessing that
perhaps
that is
Yes, they said, how can we alienate people from our business? I'm sure that's how they put it to the shareholders.
Well, even if
I'm
that
not
wasn't
let you run
even
a business.
If that wasn't what they decided, that seems to be the end result
well,
at the moment.
Be that as it may, that's a separate issue.
Okay.
It's okay.
A 15-year-old boy was killed and a 14-year-old girl suffered a head injury in a shooting in Forest Grove on Saturday. Counselors were at the school Monday helping students in the tight-knit community deal with the sudden death. Officers responded to a shooting call to the 1600 block of Poplar Place at about 5:30. They found a boy at the scene who had died from a gunshot wound and a girl with a laceration on her head. The female was treated and released from a local hospital. Officers detained 18-year-old Cody James Ward in connection with the shooting. He was charged with criminally negligent homicide and lodged in Washington County Jail. The victim was later identified as Trenton Joseph Lester. He and Ward were students in the Forest Grove School District. The shotgun is believed to have belonged to Ward's father. Ward was not related to either victim.
You know, the real tragedy here is I can't make a Poplar's joke.
No.
Because, you know, loss of life.
Did you spill something on yourself? Or?
No, there was something on the base of that microphone when I picked it up and moved it earlier. There was like a gummy sort of, you know, like a sticker residue.
Okay.
Like if you peel a sticker off and there's... And so I was picking it up and then I didn't realize that there was this gummy residue on my fingertips. And I went to use my trackpad and now it's on the track. And I don't want it to get down on the crevasse, down in the crease of my trackpad. So I'm going to wipe it off.
So you're using like your jacket or something to... Okay.
Well, my shoe's all the way down here.
Right.
My jacket.
I don't know what it is.
Yes, my ascot is being used to... No, it's a piece of curtaining. It's
oh,
a spare
okay.
piece of curtaining that we've never used.
Oh,
that I keep around just for such an emergency.
Oh, please.
It's like I keep my feathers numbered.
Okay. A Washington homeowner is missing an approximately 10-foot-tall fiberglass giraffe from his yard. Kitsap County Sheriff's deputies responded to a complaint Saturday morning. An 80-year-old man lives in the property where the giraffe was placed within an enclosed yard. The man's son reported the theft, saying the man is homebound and did not initially notice it was missing. The giraffe is described as being between 9 and 11 feet tall.
It's a giraffe. We know what it... Really?
and 5 and 6 feet long.
Does it have a long neck, or is it the short neck kind?
I think it's a long neck and orange spots.
That's great.
It probably had to be transported by truck, they say, because it would likely not fit into a car. The son also told deputies he called them because he wanted them to be aware of the theft in case they spotted the giraffe somewhere, saying it would probably be hard to conceal.
Can we get like an artist rendering of the giraffe, you know, like one of those Instaprint sort of things?
So if you're in Kitsap County, keep an eye out for a fiberglass giraffe.
Will do.
A small World War II era plane crashed Friday during a Reno, Nevada air race. It was equipped with a video recorder that investigators hope to use in determining what happened and why. 9 people, including the pilot, were killed and close to 70 people were injured. Ed Larson was one of those hurt. He said the plane landed right behind him.
Land, by the way, is a bit of a... I think that maybe that's a bit of an elastic use of the phrase.
It just makes you appreciate to be alive. And that's the first thing I can say is that, you know, I got extremely lucky.
Seriously, it was like, you've seen the video probably, but it's like the plane, it's like doing, I don't know, loops or barrel rolls or something. And Drudge went right to the fact that the guy's like 1,000 years old, but apparently there was a big piece that just fell off the plane as it was flying around because somebody forgot the ball bearings or whatever. And so the plane is flying and you can see just a huge chunk of it just kind of go and just sort of fall off. And that was apparently the stay-up-a-tron that they put on there. And that, absent that, so then the plane just kind of goes straight up, because I think he figured out something was wrong, and then it just goes straight down, and then it was, I mean, like right into just a huge, it's like when you were a kid and you would just drop a rock on an anthill. It was bad. It was really, really, really freaky to watch.
Wow. Larson says he feels lucky to be alive.
The thing crashes right behind me, and all I remember as I'm trying to run is I see stuff coming, and then that's the last thing I heard. I remember.
No, it hits, and then it was like a fireworks explosion where just contrails of stuff shot out in every direction, and landed on the crowd. It was really bizarre. I mean, it's like because you see planes crash sometimes, but it literally just went straight down. Not angled at all. It was really weird.
They've recovered pieces of the video camera and memory cards from the scene of the crash. The NTSB's Mark Rosekind said they'll be sending those items to the research and engineering laboratories in Washington, D.C. You've got another sound there.
Do I? Does it say plane 3?
It
does. We'll also be sending all the photos and videos. Again, we have discussed this, that there's been, because of the race going on, a tremendous amount of photos and videos are available for analysis from this accident.
And I think they had the airport or the runway or the tarmac or whatever, like, ready. And it was, I don't know, it was up and running again. Like, this is, no matter who you are or what you accomplish, this is how your life ends. Within, like, 45 minutes or something of the crash, they just had swept everything into a glad bag, and they were just landing planes there again. So, you know, live while you're alive, because you just end up in a glad bag at the end of it all.
Officials say a construction crane crashed into the lobby of a Louisiana nursing home, injuring a worker but no residents. It happened about 10:20 a.m. Monday at The Oaks, a retirement community operated by Willis Knighton Health System. Health spokesman Charlie Cavell said one employee was taken to the hospital for possible injuries. He said another crane must be brought in to remove the one that fell into the building. It actually fell from a building in Shreveport.
Jesus.
Calls by the Associated Press to the healthcare system were not immediately returned. The complex includes a nursing home with a health center, assisted living apartments, and an independent living apartment complex. I think we should do our science.
Here's your Science on the March for Monday, September 19th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You can also call 503-252-1609 if that's the way you choose to get a hold of them. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, if you are taking over another building, if you are taking over a different sort of business and you want to make sure that it's wired for your purposes, if you're going to be expanding into multiple facilities, if you're going to be moving your business into your home, if you're going to be renting out your place to somebody else or buying someone else's place for yourself, you want to make sure that everything is as it appears, as it was marketed to be, and as it needs to perform. You can find them at 503-252-1609. They'll also give you an estimate up front so you know about what you're going to pay. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. The electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors based right here in Portland, Oregon, and proud sponsors of Science on the March. They are Squires Electric.
Unrealistic beliefs in one's ability to win out over others may have an upside. Overconfidence boosts individual success in competitive games as long as desired objects provide big enough benefits to offset the cost of competing for them. This via political scientist Dominic Johnson of the University of Edinburgh and James Fowler of the University of California, San Diego. In computer models presented in the September 15th Nature, Johnson and Fowler found that overconfidence spreads rapidly in populations because of its competitive advantages. Overconfidence greased the wheels of human cultural evolution, they propose, even if it now sometimes sponsors financial collapses and wars. Daily deal sites such as Groupon and Living Social boost sales and revenue for participating merchants, but the reputations of the businesses may take a hit.
Is this the same story?
No, these are two different ones. We're done with that first one. This is now about Groupon.
But it's interesting that you're talking about the overconfidence leading to financial collapse occasionally, and then you follow it up with the Groupon story.
Yeah, sure. The space break. Yes. Reviews on Yelp that refer to daily deals are more negative, lowering merchant ratings for months after a daily deal offer, and according to an analysis of more than 56,000 Groupon reviews. A new work, which is reported by Boston University and Harvard researchers, suggests the ultimate economic effects of daily deals for the merchant aren't particularly clear. So they will make money, but at the same time, it could affect their reputation in the long run. A 20-year-old satellite is expected to crash into Earth later this week, and the debris has a roughly 1 in 3,200 chance of hitting a person.
Excellent.
NASA's current projections show the Upper Atmosphere Research Satellite, or UARS, that's how they're pronouncing it, if it will finally succumb to the Earth's gravity in the next several days with an expected impact on Friday. The Washington Post explains even actual rocket scientists can't say for certain when or where the impact will occur. They write, out-of-control crashing satellites don't lend themselves to exact estimates, even for the precision-minded folks at NASA.
Damn satellites.
The uncertainty about the when makes the where all the trickier, because a small change in timing of the re-entry translates into thousands of miles of difference in the crash site. NASA officials have said that the drop zone for the URs could be anywhere between the latitudes of northern Canada and southern South America, an area that includes pretty much the entire planet.
So really, it could be anywhere.
Yes.
They could have just stopped it anywhere.
They could have just stopped it. It could be anywhere. It
could be anywhere at all.
It won't be in Antarctica, I guess, is what they're saying. Still, they say the chances that someone will be injured during the impact is extremely remote, and that most likely the satellite will land with a splash in a body of water. The satellite is expected to partially burn up during reentry, but plenty of space souvenirs will likely survive. Scientists predict the satellite will break into about 100 pieces, with about a quarter of them likely to remain after the reentry burn. The largest surviving piece could weigh as much as 300 pounds. Surgeons said today that one-year-old conjoined twins from Sudan were recovering well, despite huge odds following four operations to separate the girls' fused heads. Rital and Ritag Gabura were born on September 22, 2010, in Khartoum, with their skulls joined. They were flown to London in April for surgery funded by the charity Facing the World. The final operation to separate them was on August 15th, and doctors said the girls were now successfully getting used to life apart and did not appear to be suffering any neurological side effects. Lead surgeon David Dunaway told a news conference, "It was a real surgical challenge, a very rare and complex operation, drawing together many different disciplines. For them to survive going through this process straightforwardly, complete and intact, with, okay, some hiccups along the way, but we hope no serious ones, and to be a few weeks later smiling, developing, acting appropriately has been wonderful for us."
Dr. Nile said that the separation was going as planned.
Yes. They're delighted. They're talking. They're moving around. They're acting like they're going to live a normal life, their father says, and be treated as normal human beings. Of course, they are going to still need further surgery when they're older to improve the shape of their skulls.
Well, yeah, because two people, it's not like you get girls worth a head there. That's just one, you know, and then they're kind of dividing it up. And, you know, and one is always greedy. Your one's always grabby, always taking the lion's portion of it.
Of the skull.
Yeah.
And that'll probably be a source of conflict between them as they get older. One of the things I was reading about this earlier too is one of the they are very small still. I mean they're 1 year old, but still, you know, at 1 year old they're already got, you know, personality.
1 years?
1 years. They're 1 year old and they have, you know, distinct personalities and whatnot. And apparently one of the things that's the weirdest for them is that they're having to adapt to the fact that now they are two different people.
Well, and also they're a lot lighter. I would imagine there's some falling over that happens.
But just like, oh, you're over there now.
Well,
is kind of
where were they joined?
Them,
at the back of the head?
They were kind of almost.
It's probably not a, you're over there. It's probably a, who are you?
They were sort of kind of side by side, but more towards the back. So they were faced not completely away from each other.
Do you
but
think they, before, for the last year, they just had a lot of like, I don't know, I just feel like somebody's following me around. I just can't shake it.
Hey, the It's like when your spouse is just crowding the bed.
It just seems like
can't get.
I don't know.
Do
you ever feel like there's somebody nearby and you just can't put your finger on it? I can't quite place it. It's the weirdest feeling.
Yeah. The Apollo 11 mission that landed Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the surface of the moon rather overshadowed the phenomenal achievement of the previous mission, Apollo 10. Yet without the bravery of Thomas Stafford, John Young, and Gene Cernan, the moon's first landing would never have happened. Not only did the Apollo 10 do everything Apollo 11 did, except actually land on the moon, it also set records for the fastest human beings ever to have flown and the furthest mankind has ever been from Earth. As part of the mission, Apollo 10's lunar module ascent stage, affectionately called Snoopy, was discarded and set into orbit around the sun. It's 42 years later, and it's still believed to be out there. And now some members of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory are going to go and try and find it. The Fox Telescope team, who are working with the Space Exploration Engineering Corp and astronomers from some observatory in Italy that I can't pronounce, are under no illusion of how difficult it will be, yet they are trying to find the moon thingy that has been missing since 1969.
I thought we were just sending it to the sun.
They went to the moon and then they discarded it, sent into orbit around the sun. And now they're sending up a search arc up to 135 million kilometers in size to try and, like, spot it.
It seems like that's a bad idea, like flying right at the sun to get something that we didn't want the first time. Because the sun seems to be some sort of universal incinerator where we just, you know, that's where you just send everything. And then it's like that little razor blade slot in the back of the mirror.
Of course, you know, we're traveling around the sun and we're not burned up.
Well, I suppose that's true. We weren't sent toward the sun, like, to dispose of us.
Well, they sent it to orbit around the sun. It didn't necessarily mean it into the sun.
Oh, I see. So it's not like a thing where it's gradually, like, it's not like the thing that's going to crash into Earth this
right.
week.
No, it's just out there just floating around
somewhere. It's just rotating.
Right.
Okay.
And finally, a 5-inch long baby dinosaur with a short nose, armor, and spikes likely drowned in what is now the Washington, D.C. Beltway, say scientists, who described the find as a new species, as well as the first hatchling of any dinosaur species ever recovered in the eastern United States. The tiny dinosaur, Propanoplosaurus marilandicus, is the youngest nodosaur ever found. This group of short-necked plant-eating dinosaurs reached about 30 feet long when fully grown and had powerful jaws and small teeth. Ray Stanford, a Maryland-based dinosaur tracker who was the lead author of the study in the Journal of Paleontology, said, "Dinosaurs grew up faster than we ever imagined. We can tell that this little guy was a hatchling because the bones were elastic and cartilaginous upon death and not ossified." Stanford found the new 110-million-year-old nodosaur while searching a creek bed in Maryland's Prince George's County after an extensive flood. The area was quite a hotbed of dinosaur activity during the early Cretaceous period. And they determined the dinosaur was closely related to other nodosaurs, but had distinctive features, particularly a very short snout, which earned it a designation as a completely new species.
Ossified is after it's been given a stentorian black voice.
Yes. And that's all the science.
There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Or you can go to facebook.com/squireselectric. While you're there, do us and them a favor and click the like button if you would. And you can read unsolicited testimonials from other fine Portlanders who've used their services and have come away beaming. Positively beaming, I say. That is Squires Electric at squireselectric.com. Proud sponsors of Science on the March. Coming up around 50 minutes from now, we'll have your entertainment news. And next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Today, Mr. Aaron Duran joining us for Week in Geek. He'll be in the studio today, and we'll have a recap of last night's episode of Breaking Bad. Yes, we will.
A German restaurant in Chicago has succeeded in beating a world record with their 47-foot, 3-inch bratwurst. The Berghoff restaurant made its stab into the record book September 15th as a way to take their annual Oktoberfest celebration to the next level, according to CEO Carolyn Berghoff. "We've been doing this event for 26 years, and we wanted to mix things up by doing something crazy and fun," she said. Schmeissner's Meats and Sausages not only provided the brat, which weighed more than 40 pounds, but the company took great pains to ensure the provenance of the meat by telling the crowd the name of the pig whose innards supplied the casing was named Chick. Eyewitnesses said the sausage was indeed very large.
So it was how big?
It was 47 feet, 3 inches long.
All right.
It needed a bun, of course, sturdy enough to hold it all, Highland Bakery supplied a bun that measured 50 feet long and required 35 pounds of dough. How would you bake that?
I don't know the answer to that.
They brought it in a 53-foot trailer truck, and they said it was the longest bun they have ever baked. I guess if you had one of those long...
You cooked it in sections. You ran it through on a conveyor belt of some kind?
Well, yeah, if you had one of those ovens that it ran, a commercial oven that ran things through on a conveyor belt, I guess maybe you could.
Yeah, like they did with bagels.
Yeah. Executive Chef Matthew Reichel said they needed 8 grills and 30 minutes to cook the bratwurst. Illinois Senate President John J. Cullerton had the privilege of the first bite. According to sources, he thought it really cut the mustard.
That's the sort of thing that we should just put on a giant jumbotron for the rest of the world. We just go, look, embrace democracy. You can have a 47-foot sausage. Here you go. Or you can eat dirt. It's up to you.
Well, then they sold 4-inch sections of it, and they raised $1,000 for Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, which is a charity that provides residential and aftercare programs for kids.
So. This is less about children and more about the chance to talk about a 47-foot sausage.
Yeah,
I mean, that really is the important thing here.
That is a big sausage.
That really is what matters.
I have seen some big sausages in my life, but that would have been, had I seen that, that would have been the largest ever. It's a big, big sausage. A lot of sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Are you done with that?
Yeah, I think so.
So I could just do a...
Okay. Police have identified the 5 people found dead inside their rented camper at a Tennessee biker festival that raised money for sick children. Police are investigating but don't suspect foul play. The victims appeared to have been overcome when fumes from a generator leaked into their vehicle. They were found Sunday at Clarksville Speedway. Clarksville Police Spokesman Jim Knoll identified the dead as 38-year-old James Franklin Wall II, 39-year-old Timothy Brian Stone, 32-year-old Allison Elizabeth Bagwell Wyatt, and a married couple, Jonathan Michael Over and Catherine Elizabeth Over, both 27, all from Clarksville. A spokesman from the nearby Fort Campbell, Kentucky, something or other, confirmed that the 5 were staying in a camper rented from the Post, visiting the biker festival, and died from carbon monoxide.
Here's a question about sausages, though, back on the sausage thing.
Yeah.
So is the length of the sausage determined by how much intestine you have? Like, if the pig had 50 feet of intestine, could they have made a 50-foot sausage?
Probably, yes. I would imagine so.
Can you stitch numerous intestines together?
That I don't know. Although intestines are very... One pig's intestine is very, very, very long. Like, one, you buy a bucket of already, like, rinsed and ready-to-go casing.
Indeed, I do.
As you do. And that's a lot. I mean, I've done it. I've worked with it. And it's, you have, like, hundreds of feet of intestines inside of you.
So they probably just, at a certain point, just said, like...
They may have just run out of meat.
47 is, like, you know, that's enough. They've made the point.
Or they just had no more meat to stick inside. That was all there was.
Or somebody pointed out the fundamental absurdity of making a 50-foot sausage.
Yeah, because 47 feet, that...
No, that's just enough.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's where you...
50 feet, it's overkill.
The point has been established, yes.
The Palestinians will make a bid to become a member state of the United Nations this coming week. Mayan Erekat, the PLO's chief representative to the U.S., says the request will be submitted on Friday.
It will talk about a Palestinian state in the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, with East Jerusalem as its capital. It will call for two-state solution, two states, Israel and Palestine, living side by side in peace and security.
Mike Loren, Israeli ambassador to the U.S., said there are real questions about the Palestinians' intentions.
What kind of state is this going to be? Is this going to be a state that's going to preserve peace? Is this going to be a state that's going to live in mutual respect and recognition with Israel? Is this a state that's going to operate on the orders of Iran and bring more instability and terror to the region? I think these are very important questions.
Maybe my map is different than everybody else's. Where is the country of Palestine?
Well,
there isn't one.
Yeah. Well, do you remember what Israel used to be called?
Well.
Palestine?
You know what America used to be called? Nothing. Used to be called Cherokee. So, I'm just saying, I mean, look, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I'm just saying it doesn't really exist, like, in the actual dictionary sense of the... You know,
Are there other...
I don't mean to be pedantic.
Are there other, like, sort of self-proclaimed nation states?
Yeah, there's a guy in Montana
he's... in the United Nations. Or are they all...
I don't know. I don't really spend as much time there as you might think.
Yeah.
It's really... They call me when they have crises.
Well, I like, though, how the Israeli guy just... He avoided just saying the obvious. He's like, look, we've been trying very, very hard to keep them in their place.
Well,
I mean, really?
As...
UN...
as somebody here puts it very succinctly, which is, look, this has nothing to do with, like, I don't care. I don't give a rat's ass who lives where. Doesn't matter to me. I'm not religious in any way, shape, manner, function, or form. So, you know, I don't really care who has a sacred hill of dirt that they think God wants them to live on. Doesn't matter. Give a rodent's rump. But, you know, like they lost the war. That's just the way it goes. You lose, you move on. You just, at some point, you have to let go. This is like the South continuing to, like, you know, like insisting that they get to, like, have the Confederate flag and be there. You lost. You lost the war. You lose the war. You don't get to fly the flag. You don't get to insist that you're still your own country. You lost. That's just the way it goes. I'm not saying that you have to be happy about it. I don't even care. I'm just saying, you know, at a certain point, you got to let it go.
You know, on the one level, intellectually, I agree with you. But on another more, like, emotional level, my people are still, like, planting car bombs in Ireland. So I kind of got to, like...
Who's still planting car bombs?
My people. The Irish Catholic people.
Your people are from, like, Modesto. Or wherever. So, you know, like, unless there's a lot more happening there than I am aware of. So...
Authorities at Oakland International Airport are investigating reports of a bomb threat on an Alaska Airlines flight from Seattle. Airport spokeswoman Joanne Holloway said someone gave a handwritten note about a bomb aboard Alaska Airlines Flight 342 to a representative at a nearby San Francisco International Airport. Officials there contacted authorities. The plane landed safely around 8 a.m. this morning and was moved to a remote area of the airport where about 150 passengers were evacuated and bomb-sniffing dogs inspected luggage on the tarmac. Holloway says the plane itself has been cleared and baggage has been rescreened. The flight had been bound for Oakland and arrived about 15 minutes ahead of schedule. So it still was even on time.
Oh, of course. No, we're getting pretty good at that. We can blast luggage with a water cannon and, you know, and have a guy in the room and be slamming his testicles in a drawer and trying to figure out what he knows about and still get everybody to Cleveland on time.
I'm always happy for the drug sniffing and the bomb sniffing dogs when they get something to do.
No, it's, well, because most of the time it's just, you know, it's like they're just sniffing out a guy's bagel or whatever, you know. Yeah. But it's like when there's something really there, you kind of go, well done. Congratulations.
Authorities in Georgia say three young intruders broke into a home, washed a dog in the bathroom, used a toothbrush, and ate some birthday cake in the kitchen before leaving behind a key piece of evidence, pictures of themselves that they took on the homeowner's camera. WSB-TV in Atlanta reports that Roderick Ward said he was gone for 10 days and became suspicious after returning home to find his air conditioner running and his back doors unlocked. Ward found a camera that had been left behind, and on it were photos of two teenagers and a younger child. Newton County authorities identified the youths and contacted their parents. Two other cameras and Ward's spare house keys were returned, and the parents apologized. Ward says he does not plan to press charges.
You know, you've almost got to admire that level of idiocy, though, that they just don't care. They either don't process it or they process it and then realize that they just don't give a rat's ass. They're just going to keep, you know, hey, here's a camera. Let's photograph ourselves. And they acted the crime. Why not? So... Because they, on some level, I think they know that these are just these are youthful hijinks. That'll all be, someday they'll make charming anecdotes when they're running for Congress.
Remember that, yes. A father and a teenage daughter were in critical condition after receiving severe burns during an alleged attempt to steal electricity from high voltage power lines in Inglewood, California. L.A. County fire officials and police responded to an explosion at a power transformer late Friday, and they found a 52-year-old man and his 17-year-old daughter with extensive electric burns, according to Inglewood Police Lieutenant Neil Cochran. The man had used tools to tap into a live wire, resulting in a chain reaction and causing the transformer to explode.
When you say they were going to steal, were they going to put the electricity in a bucket? Or
I'm unsure of what they were planning to do with the stolen electricity.
Now, you were asking earlier if this is a Darwin watch, and I would say no, because they're not dead yet. I mean, yeah. It seems like they probably won't be. Their reproductive opportunities will be limited, but...
Their names were not released, and they were taken to a nearby hospital pending an eventual transfer to a burn unit. And again, they are in critical condition. Power lines connected to the transformer near Hawthorne Boulevard and 101st Street were temporarily shut off because of the explosion. The incident occurred about 11:40 p.m. Friday. A theft investigation is underway.
I just... And maybe I did miss this, but it was like they were going to run the electricity to... Where?
I don't know. Maybe they lived nearby and they thought they could power their house off of it or something.
They just didn't want to, like, go over and stick something in their neighbor's, you know, backyard outlet like everybody else does?
I don't know.
All right. Well, that's intriguing. It's Thomas Gill, of all people, says, not dead yet, but hopefully everything is fused. It's a terrible thing to say, if amusing.
Let's do our entertainment news.
All right. Here's your entertainment news for Monday, September 19th, 2011, right here at Cascadia.fm.
Tracy Morgan, let's say that again, announced his engagement on the Emmy Awards red carpet last night. The 30 Rock funny man told Ryan Seacrest that he and his fiancée Megan Wallover got engaged 6 months ago in San Francisco. Said Wallover of the traditional proposal, "It wasn't anything crazy. It was on bended knee and everything." This will be Morgan's second marriage. In 2009, he divorced Sabrina Morgan, his wife of 23 years. Instantly recognizable character actress Frances Bay, known for playing the grandmother of Adam Sandler's angry golfer in Happy Gilmore and for having a loaf of marble rye stolen from her in an episode of Seinfeld, died Thursday in Los Angeles at the age of 92. Bay often portrayed kindly old women, but she also turned in some memorably unkindly performances in films like David Lynch's Wild at Heart and John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. Most recently, she played Aunt Ginny on the ABC sitcom The Middle.
Oh, okay. I know who she is. Yeah.
Yeah. Eccentric L.A. Lakers basketball star Ron Artest has officially changed his legal name to Meta World Peace. The name change comes just in time for World Peace's stint on the new season of Dancing with the Stars.
Awesome.
Which premieres on Monday, September 19th. So now they're going to have to keep referring to him as Meta World Peace.
That's fantastic.
Cleveland prosecutors have elected not to charge Lust star Matthew Fox after an assault complaint was filed against him last month. Heather Borman, a party bus driver from Cleveland, claimed that on August 28th at 1:30 a.m., Fox attempted to board her bus, which was parked outside of a restaurant called Shooters. Borman said that Fox demanded she drive him back to the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, but because she was hired to a private group, she informed him he would need to find another ride. She alleged that Fox attacked her with his fists, delivering sudden and severe blows to her right breast, groin, arm, and legs, and inflicting severe disabling injury and pain. Borman also suggested that Fox was heavily intoxicated at the time. Cleveland City spokesman Andrea Taylor said in a statement today, the decision to not charge Fox was made after a thorough review of the facts. Borman's lawyer said that the decision was a miscarriage of justice. Alex Da Silva, a former choreographer on Fox's hit show So You Think You Can Dance, was found guilty of raping one woman and assaulting another on Friday. An L.A. County jury found Da Silva guilty of raping a 22-year-old woman in August of 2002. He was also guilty of assaulting a second woman in 2009 with attempt to rape, but the jury was deadlocked on four additional charges of sexual penetration by a foreign object and forcible rape. Los Angeles County Superior Court Judge Kathleen Kennedy has declared a mistrial on the latter charges, which involve two women. Prosecutors are still deciding whether to seek to retry Da Silva on the additional four counts. All four victims were dancers who met Da Silva, a salsa dancer, through his dance class.
New show, Do You Think You Can Be Quiet for 10 to 12 Minutes?
The Emmy Awards were given out last night, and Kim Serafin of Touch Weekly, says it might have been
Touch
called...
Touch Weekly, I think, is something else altogether.
That's the NAMBLA newsletter.
Yes.
Says it might have been called the Modern Family Awards as far as the comedy category.
Such a great show. Won Best Comedy, but also won for the Best Supporting Actress and Best Supporting Actor. Julie Bowen and Ty Burrell both won. They were nominated for so many Emmys. So I think so many people are going to be talking about Modern Family. I mean, this was really just dominated the Emmy Awards.
She puts a lot of extra vowels in things.
Is she going to keep talking? Jeez, she hurt me. Mad Men took home five Emmy Awards, including its fourth time for Best Drama. Executive producer Matthew Weiner accepted the award.
Let's see, Emmys two?
Yes.
I want to really particularly single out my incredibly writing staff and my incredible cast who is behind me here, and they're so talented and so gifted, and we all get to go to work tomorrow, and that's all we ever wanted to do.
I'd like to thank Walking Dead for paying all my bills for the next year. That's great of you guys. Way to take one for the team.
Among the other awards that were given out, Juliana Margulis won for The Good Wife for Best Actress in Drama Series.
I dig her.
Kyle Chandler won for Friday Night Lights for Best Actor in a Drama Series. Peter Dinklage won Supporting Actor for Game of Thrones.
Excellent.
Which makes me happy because I love him. And Supporting Actress in a Drama Series, Margot Martindale for Justified.
Awesome.
Yes. A lot to Modern Family. Downton Abbey won for Best Miniseries or Movie. Kate Winslet won an award for her work in Mildred Pierce. Barry Pepper won for his appearance in The Kennedys.
Okay, so Barry Pepper looks like two other guys. Well, first of all, is Mildred Pierce, is that like a miniseries?
That was the Gus Van Sant miniseries based on the old on the it was a old Joan Crawford movie, and it was a Kane novel, a James N. Kane novel.
Okay, all right. So Barry Pepper, though, I was thinking about this the other day. So Barry Pepper, who was in, that's the guy in Battlefield Earth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, you never understand, he looks like two other people. He looks, well, first of all, he looks just the slightest bit like Michael Rapaport, but he looks uncannily like the crazy autistic guy in Cube, who, like, navigates them to the rooms by calculating the prime numbers or whatever, and then is always, like, rocking back and forth and going, seven, or whatever.
Okay, I can see that.
It's like a thing that, it's probably a thing that only I care about or know. I'm just saying.
There was also in miniseries or movie, the supporting awards went to Maggie Smith for Downton Abbey and to Guy Pearce for Mildred Pierce. Martin Scorsese won his first Emmy Award for directing HBO's Boardwalk Empire. Scorsese says directing a TV series is quite a bit different from directing a film. He said it's like the B-movie directors of the 50s and 60s.
This reminds me of you need the mindset of that so you can move faster and not be encumbered by too much. You know, but that gives you freedom, I say. That gives you a lot of creative freedom, too.
Charlie Sheen was at the Emmy Awards to present the Lead Actor in a Comedy Series Award, but he said he wanted to get something off his chest and say a few words to the cast of Two and a Half Men, his former series. I have not heard this, by the way, this clip, but I did see people on Twitter and stuff saying that he looked and sounded like a guy who was just about to announce that he had a bomb.
Really? I didn't, you know, here's the thing. I didn't see much of the Emmys, and I didn't see any. Wasn't his roast last night, too?
Yeah.
I didn't see any of that. That's the thing that
the roast is tonight.
Is it tonight?
Yeah, because it's scheduled.
Okay, tonight's the premiere of Two and a Half Men.
Right.
Okay, yeah. So at least I felt kind of bad that I missed it. Let's see. So
from the bottom of my heart, I wish you nothing but the best for this upcoming season.
Even at the end, you can hear he, like, crazy Sheen starts to, you know, that is, none of us will make it home alive. He does a little bit of that where he's just starting to fray at the edges a little bit as he gets to the end of his thing there. But so, what's her name? So, Mags Bennett, though, from Justified. Good for her.
Yes.
I didn't even know she would. I'm so out of the loop. I think it's either because A, I'm old, B, they don't matter anymore, C, there's too many of them, or D, there's too much of everything, and so that's what's gone over the side, is I just don't follow awards nominations or ceremonies at all anymore. I had no idea the Emmys were happening last night until I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw a few. I just couldn't be bothered. I think I'm going to watch it tonight just to fast forward through to the parts I want to see. But let's see, Jim Parsons won for Best Actor in Comedy Series for The Big Bang Theory. Melissa McCarthy won for Best Actress in a Comedy Series for Mike and Molly, which is a bad show with a great cast. And I love her, and it's really nice to see her, you know, win an Emmy Award, and I think she's really hilarious and deserving, but that is not a good TV show.
I have never seen it. I've never seen it, but I mean, I know people who watch it, but it's just, I am not one of those people.
Yeah, no, it's not good. So, the best reality competition program, The Amazing Race, which I have never seen a single episode of.
Every time The Amazing Race is actually not so bad. I'm not a reality fan, but that's just me. I mean, it has nothing, like, I'm not, like, I don't have a, like, I don't have some grudge against reality. I don't have, like, some jihad against it the way that a lot of people do. It's just not my bag. Lara has made me promise, though, that if they ever, like, the next time they come through and they do, like, open auditions, that I will try out with her to be on the show.
Oh, boy.
Because, because she likes to travel, and he's an a-hole, and, you know, or whatever. And she's great, and everybody hates him, and, you know, whatever. And so that's, and but I, and also I hate to travel, and I don't like people, and I don't like to go anywhere or do anything. So it'd be great, obviously, to have me on the show. But it is, I have to say that the times that she's been watching The Amazing Race and I've been in the room, it is pretty fantastic. I mean, in terms of reality programming. I mean, it's, never mind. Nobody cares. Okay. The point is that if you watch it, you know what I'm talking about. If not, you're probably never going to watch it. So it's just irrelevant.
Tarek Salahi, the husband of former Real Housewives of D.C. star Michaela Salahi, and of course the White House Grace Gatecrashery people, filed for divorce on Friday on the grounds of adultery.
Okay.
Of course, you know, they were previously known for going to a White House state dinner without an invitation. They made headlines earlier this week when he reported she was missing and said she had been kidnapped. And then, of course, we found out that she was actually fine. She was staying with Journey guitarist Neil Schon. Schon is mentioned by name in the papers, and Turek stresses the humiliation caused by the public's knowledge of his wife's affair. The complaint says, over the objections of me, she continually exposes our friends and acquaintances to her adulterous relationship and has flaunted the same throughout the community, the nation, and indeed the world, and thus caused me to suffer great harm, humiliation, and embarrassment.
Over the objections of me.
Over the objections of me.
I don't think that's how that should be phrased. I think that's wrong.
He also claims that Schon sent an email with an attachment of a penis to his own account, and that Journey paid for Michaela's travel accommodations and other expenses. Turek said there's no hope for reconciliation, and mentions that the couple does have a prenuptial agreement.
Why would you have to send your you're in Journey. Is that not enough anymore?
No, apparently not.
It used to be that, like, if you had a medical practice or something, you were in.
Well, I think maybe this was one of those things. Hey, remember this?
Huh.
I guess I don't know.
Yes, I snickered just a moment ago because as you were talking about The Amazing Race and something I shouldn't have laughed at. It's one of those things where I shouldn't have laughed and I did, and I just trying to hold it together. Our friend Seamus, in his first tweet of the day, by the way, or his first Skype message of the day, just weighed in. I think we all know which race is amazing. So, and I shouldn't have laughed at that, and then I just did, and I sort of snorted it out before
I'm surprised that came from Seamus and not Keelan.
No, it's... Well, come on, Don. I mean, let's not traffic in the world of fiction, shall we? Did you see the thing? And so he also sent this. Did you see the thing from what's his name? Rainn Wilson from The Office.
No.
So he put out a tweet last night. This 13 hours ago, so whatever. So like 10 o'clock last night, which was immediately retweeted by like everybody in the world. He says the world of TV should be ashamed of itself that Steve Carell never won an Emmy for playing Michael Scott. Good night. And which I agree, but you know, but if we get on the road of people and shows that never ever got acknowledged by, that's why I said earlier that maybe I'm old, but maybe I've realized that the awards. The awards don't really matter to anyone except other people in that industry. It is just like this big, it's just this big daisy chain of backslapping and glad handing. I mean, because it clearly, and I don't say this in an embittered way, but it clearly is not an indication of quality. It is occasionally, but accidentally, like it's incidental if it happens to be an indication of quality. It really is a lot of, as the Weinsteins have demonstrated over the years, it really is just about marketing and campaigning more than anything else. So,
and depending on which award it is, it's not even a particularly large cross-section of the industry. Some of them, like the Golden Globes, are decided by just a couple hundred people.
Yeah.
And most of them, you know, don't really have any kind of a horse in the race anyway. So it doesn't really matter. They really are something to watch for entertainment value and not because they're any kind of an indication of genuine quality.
It just seems like, it seems like the Emmys get, the Emmys get the awards right about the same way that Jim Cramer gets stocks right. Like, it's just sort of like he has a monkey hit the newspaper and then he goes, you know, booyah! You know, and then he, like, recommends, and then, like, one time out of five, like, it ends up being accurate.
Well, it's our last one here. Stephen Colbert meeting Radiohead is such a special occasion that they have decided to air their first hour-long episode on September 26th when Colbert will sit down with the rock group. Radiohead will perform four songs, including material off its most recent album, The King of Limbs, as well as the recently debuted and unreleased track, The Daily Mail. An additional song will be performed for the online version of the Colbert Report. Colbert said in a statement, "I look forward to meeting the Radioheads and leveraging their anti-corporate indie cred to raise brand awareness for my sponsors."
Did you see that picture of him and Stephen King?
No.
It's a great photo that I got sent of Stephen Colbert meeting Stephen King. It's awesome, too. They're wearing the same outfit. I don't even know what the context of it was. I mean, he must have been on the show. But it was Stephen Colbert meeting Stephen King, and I'll put it up in the visual aid section at rickemerson.com/pictures visual aid September 19th, because Stephen Colbert is doing his patented wacky face, and then Stephen King is looking at the camera as though he is trying to suck your soul out of your body and through the screen with the power of his eyes.
I did see a photo this weekend that Cable Hashitani posted on his blog. I don't know where it came from, but it's Bruce Campbell holding the sword from Highlander while wearing a full Clan Campbell tartan dress, standing in front of a statue of William Wallace in front of Edinburgh Castle.
Why?
I have no idea.
I mean, other than the fact that it seems inevitable and it's awesome.
Yeah.
There's no other real reason there?
No idea, other than it just, I guess, he realized, well, this is something I must do.
Well, and who can disagree? We got like 30 seconds here. There's something short.
Well, this is almost entertainment related. A suitcase and clothing purported to have belonged to Italian dictator Benito Mussolini and his mistress and obtained by a World War II veteran from Western New York have been sold in an auction for more than $5,000. The Democrat and Chronicle of Rochester reports Mussolini's uniform and Claretta Patacci's dress sold for $5,500 during Sunday's auction in Dallas. The auctioneer had estimated the items would fetch between $10,000 and $15,000. The items were put up for auction by the widow of Paul Morricone, a Rochester-area doctor who acquired the suitcase in the last days of the war while he was serving in northern Italy. Italian partisans gave the suitcase to his commanding officer after Mussolini and Patacci were captured and executed while trying to flee to Switzerland in April 1945.
Benito Mussolini. Yes, there's your entertainment news for Monday.
Your Mussolini news for today.
And with that, we bring down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We'll see you next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, joining us in studio, Mr. Aaron Duran for The Weekend Geek. We'll also recap last night's Breaking Bad, Episode 10, Season 4. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we will see you again tomorrow at noon. Thank you.